Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very warm welcome to you all, wherever you are listening from. This is Africa Link, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
With me, Jane Ayeka Kumet. We are also live on our DW Facebook page, so do join the conversation. In the meantime, here are some of the stories that we've lined up. Ethiopia announces readiness to honor the 2000 Algiers Agreement, requiring it to see the disputed Badme land to Eritrea. Is Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed being too ambitious?
Some people say that he is not doing by himself. There are people that are, you know, supporting him.
Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni makes State of Nation address, lamenting the excessive importation of household items. He wants his country to embark on local production.
58% of the roads, for instance, have been done or have been done by the government of Uganda.
These are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But before we go ahead, here's a chance to listen to some of the stories that have been making headlines around the globe.
I'm Sertan Sanderson with DW News. German Chancellor Angela Merkel faced a question and answer session in the Bundestag on Wednesday, with lawmakers grilling her on the issue of refugees, as well as German relations with Russia. An opposition politician from the far-right Alternative for Germany party asked Merkel when she would resign over her open-door refugee policy. Merkel replied that the exceptional humanitarian situation of the refugee crisis had been handled very responsibly by Germany. The Chancellor was also challenged about her frosty relationship with Russia since the annexation of Crimea in 2014.
Crimea's annexation was a flagrant violation of international law, and that's why Russia's exclusion from the G8 format was unavoidable. We did not end the talks. I am in favor of talks with Russia, while bearing our differences in mind. Dialogue is always important.
German astronaut Alexander Gerst has left for his second mission in space, where he will be the first German commander of the International Space Station. The Soyuz rocket carrying Gerst launched from the spaceport in Baikonur in Kazakhstan at 1:12 p.m. Central European Time. Gerst is accompanied by Russian cosmonaut Sergei Prokopyev and U.S. astronaut Serena Onon, Chancellor. Judges at the International Court of Justice have ruled that they have jurisdiction to hear a case brought by Equatorial Guinea against France. The lawsuit at the ICJ centers on whether the French government violated diplomatic protocol when it raided a residence in Paris belonging to the son of Equatorial Guinea's president as part of a corruption investigation. You're listening to DW News. Ethiopia has announced that it will accept the terms of a peace agreement with neighboring Eritrea in a major step towards calming decades of tensions between the two countries. The decision on the peace deal means that Ethiopia will have to cede disputed land it has occupied for nearly 20 years. The announcement came as part of a slew of reforms in Ethiopia designed at opening the country up to foreign investment. Five police officers were killed in eastern Kenya when their vehicle struck an improvised explosive device, or IED, in Liboy, close to the country's eastern border with Somalia. Three others were injured. No group has claimed responsibility for the attacks so far, but over the past year, Al-Shabaab insurgents based in Somalia have claimed several such attacks, killing dozens of Kenyan police and soldiers. The White House has announced a proposal to cut $250 million US in leftover funding to fight the Ebola virus in Africa. The cut would be part of a plan to save $15 billion US of government spending in total. The announcement came as another two people died of the deadly virus in the Democratic Republic of Congo, bringing the total tally of Ebola-related deaths in the DRC to 27. More than 11,000 people died from Ebola in the West African states of Guinea, Liberia, and Sierra Leone between 2013 and 2015. And for more news and information, please log on to dw.com. I'm Sertan Sanderson.
You're still listening to DW's Africa Link program with me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Zipora Nyambura. It's a pleasure to welcome you, our Facebook listeners, on Facebook page DW Africa. Do drop us a line and share this audio.
Ethiopia announced on Tuesday that it would implement a peace agreement ending a 1998-2000 war with Eritrea. The agreement requires Ethiopia to cede disputed land in Badme, the region that it has occupied for almost two decades. Now, the move is part of a radical reform agenda initiated by Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed, who has been in office for only 2 months. Ahmed has also promised greater democracy and says his government will allow foreigners to invest in the country. As an Ethiopian, DW's Mantegasto Silesie has been telling me what he makes of these developments.
For many of the people who follow the developments in the last 2 months, it's not a surprise because in his acceptance speech, Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed expressed his willingness to bring peace between Ethiopia and Eritrea. So people were expecting something, but I don't think that people just, you know, expecting just like this. On the other hand, we didn't see from the officials from Eritrean side, but, you know, some journalists and some concerned citizens from Eritrea expressing their feelings of this announcement from Ethiopian side on social media, especially on Twitter and Facebook. And they said this is not a surprise.
Now, 17 years since Eritrea and Ethiopia signed an agreement in Algiers to end the two-year conflict that was triggered by competing claims for territory along the border. Now, Ethiopia refused to honor this agreement and now it is doing so. Why?
If you follow Ethiopian political developments, it's really fast forward. You know, things are just, you know, moving rapidly. Some even claim that, you know, before this decision, United States, you know, Yamamoto were in Eritrea and then he was also in Ethiopia. So there is a discussion between Ethiopia and Eritrea behind the door. People say that. So probably that's a long way process and then they decided at the moment.
Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has been in office since April. Does he command support for the kind of programs that he wants to put in place?
When you're comparing him with, you know, the late Prime Minister Haile Mariam Desalegn, he's just more free and then he can do a lot of things. You know, he just freed a lot of political prisoners. And he even announced a political reform in Ethiopia, which is completely not thinkable. And he's ready to discuss with Eritrean government. Some people say that he is not doing by himself. There are people are, you know, supporting him. But when you see the people, Ethiopian society, many of them, when they see this change after, you know, 3 decades, you know, such kind of process, they support him. Some of them are still in doubt. And even some say that there are people behind, for instance, the military. So we don't know what they are thinking and doing. You know, things are now a little bit fast and a little bit tricky now.
Things are a little bit fast and a little bit tricky. That is DW's Mantegasto Silesie from the Amharic Department.
And of course, you've been telling us all your feedback on this story. And Evan Christopher says, our problem in Africa is not land and who has sovereignty over it. Our problem is a bunch of cancerous, evil, vile people who take power with force or lies and cunning and destroy the destiny of the people.
And Caleb Chauru from Nairobi says, for sure, this is a good move, an excellent example for other African countries to follow. Do join the conversation by visiting our DW Facebook page, that is DW Africa, and share your opinion there.
Back here in Europe, German astronaut Alexander Guest spearheads a team of three who blasted off today for a 6-month mission to the International Space Station. The crew composed of, among others, Serena Aunon from the United States and Sergei Prokofiev of Russia. They're scheduled to conduct research 400 kilometers above the Earth's surface, which will prepare future missions to Mars. Ina Kamules has more.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. See the engine is igniting there. And liftoff of Soyuz MS.
That blast marked the official takeoff of the Soyuz rocket at the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. German astronaut Gerst, who is also a geophysicist and a doctor, will be commanding the space station for the first time during his mission dubbed Horizons. The mission program includes 250 experiments in fields such as biology, earth science, and technology. Speaking before takeoff, Gerst said his second mission may be easier based on his first experience in his first visit to space.
When you fly a second time to space, the training actually gets much easier. The first time you fly, you have the problem that you get a lot of detail. Because of the experience of my first flight, I can just cut out the unimportant things and concentrate on the things that are really important. We have many experiments on board. We have in the order of 200 to 300 in every expedition, so I'm really looking forward to conducting these. It's very important to see the science that we do on the space station, not just as a one-off experiment that we do in one mission, like my expedition, but it's a series of experiments that develop over time.
DW science correspondent Zulfikar Abani says Gerst remains a motivation for many aspiring young scientists across Europe and the world.
Well, he is seen as Germany's space ambassador or ambassador to space. The new generation of astronauts are scientists. And so he really stands there as Germany's and one of Europe's main ambassadors in space. So a lot of buzz about that. But nervousness, because even though he's been there before, it is space we're talking about. Everybody's nervous about a space launch.
Ahead of blastoff, a Russian Orthodox priest had to bless the rocket, marking the start of a long journey for the three astronauts. The blessing of the Soyuz rocket is one of several traditions of Russian space travel.
A long journey indeed. Ineke Mules presented that report. Now to Uganda. Revamping the economy, mechanization of agriculture and embarking on local production were some of the key points made by Ugandan President Yoweri Kaguta Museveni as he made his annual State of Nation address.
To many Ugandans, the speech fell short of addressing security, which is the most pressing issue in the country at the moment. Many were expecting the president to address the rampant ransom kidnaps that have been on the rise. From Kampala, Alex Gitter reports.
There have been a number of cases confirmed by the police where mostly children and women are kidnapped, and the kidnappers have demanded for money to spare their lives. A number of people that DW spoke to earlier before Museveni's speech wanted the president to explain what his government was doing to stop these crimes.
If he's addressing anything about safety, security, actually it has just worsened. If you're talking about agriculture and the taxes on the inputs, has remained the same. Where do you expect a peasant to live a happy life and feel proud of his country?
We are not safe. We are not safe because people are poor. Because of poverty, people are just kidnapping us because of poverty.
In the meantime, the crimes continue, and in his speech, Museveni did not highlight the way forward.
58% of the roads, for instance, have been done or are being done by the government of Uganda money.
Many people also remain concerned that the health sector is in a bad state, but the president did not highlight any plans to improve it. Museveni's government also continues to be tainted by human rights abuses, more especially by the Uganda police, and corruption. Museveni attacked the office of the Inspector General of Government for not doing enough to fight corruption among public officials. However, Museveni said his government was to continue concentrating on infrastructure development projects fully funded by his government.
Some of the terrorists of ADF, as well as other criminal elements, seeing that they could not survive in the rural areas, infiltrated into the towns where we had not fully focused on in terms of developing intelligence capacity. These killings seem to have been linked with ADF. Other killings were by local criminals using pangas. With this new challenge, we put in place mechanisms to build the intelligence gathering capacity in the towns and on the highways.
He also announced that his government was going to revive the Uganda Airlines. Uganda is one of a few African countries without a national airliner.
Alex Gita from Kampala. Some good news there for Ugandans if they finally have a national airline.
Yeah, that sounds like a real progress for sure.
Probably it makes us easy to visit each other from the neighborhood. Anyhow, keep those comments coming and we shall present them when time allows us.
Welcome back to the program. I am Zipporah Nyambura.
With me, Jane Ayeko-Kumet. Do remember that you can join the conversation or listen to the program by visiting our Facebook page. That's DW Africa.
Sound the alarm. It's getting drastic.
We're causing harm with plastic. Still to come, using music to fight environmental pollution. We will hear of Ghanaian rappers on a mission to change perceptions.
The only thing thriving in this water now are mosquito babies, mosquito larvae. And so the environment is becoming more dangerous for us to live in.
We will have more of that. But first we head to Nigeria, where for years, northeastern Nigeria has been on the front line in the fight against Boko Haram Islamist militants. The jihadis are mainly active in Borno State and control large parts of the capital, Maiduguri, for a while. 3 years ago, the country's army drove them out. Since then, illegal hotels and one of the city's red light districts have come back to life, catering, among others, to soldiers deployed in the area.
But as our DW correspondent Adrian Kirsch found out, the government has begun to demolish these businesses, prompting fears of unemployment among the local population. Here is his report, presented by Isaac Mugabe.
It was early morning when the bulldozers moved in. Within a few hours, an entire neighborhood in Borno State's capital Maiduguri was demolished. Uchena Mwoka, who runs one of the hotels, managed to rescue his valuables from his guest house just in time.
Is here is our source of living. All our families depends on here. School fees, like me, I bought here, borrow money from bank to put here in order. Up to 5 months to 6 months, give us a notice to pack out. Now, even bank where I borrow money, I never pay them. They are after me now.
20 guest houses and hotels were destroyed a few blocks away from the former headquarters of Boko Haram. The Islamist militants were forced out of the city 3 years ago. Since then, locals say prostitution has boomed in the area, not least due to the ongoing deployment of government soldiers in the surrounding region. Abraham Kanti from the Galdaima Hoteliers Association explains.
Coupled with the situation in the country now and the insurgency attempt, we have a lot of military here. If this place is being shut down, where soldiers come from bush to come? So because somebody who is married, who has been with his wife, and you have taken him away to the bush for more than 3-4 months, the moment he comes into the town, his wife is not here, his family is not here, and he can't go raping gays on the street. This is a place to come and ease his tension.
The state government refutes those claims. Kaka Shehu, the Commissioner for Justice in Borno, maintains that there have been repeated cases of rape and drug abuse recently, and that even minors have been found in these guest houses and hotels.
This is a criminal zone. It is a flashpoint. Prostitution and drugs are illegal, not only in the state, anywhere in Nigeria. And that for those people that are drinking alcohol, the state actually marked their designated places approved for the consumption of alcohol. This is not one of them. You could see that this is a residential area where people are supposed to sit peacefully.
Despite Sharia law in force in these parts, the red light district has flourished. However, many people in Maiduguri are divided on its demolition.
Prostitution is a bad thing, yes. And our most concern, we are part of children. We have born babies and they are in those environment. So when they grow up, they will just practice what they are seeing on ground.
Honestly, what the government is doing is not fair. No one on earth can show sinners the true path, only God. That's for God to do and not for people.
Prostitution is not good. Let them go and do some works to survive.
But since the unrest began 7 years ago, work has been hard to find. Hundreds of thousands of refugees have poured into Maiduguri. Zainab Mohammed is one of them.
If they destroy everything here, they should give us all new jobs or find us men to marry.
That is one of the locals there at Maiduguri. That report was compiled by Adrian Krish.
Now, we stay in Nigeria, and some other story that we've been covering is that give us back our money. Nigeria's President Muhammad Buhari is doing everything to get back state money that was stolen by corrupt officials. Now we asked you, how do you measure his success? Do you think he's on the right track? And David from Southeast Nigeria says, well, we've seen many of them claiming to get back our stolen money. At the end, the money goes into the same person who is claiming to be fighting to get back the money.
Well, many seem to have negative perceptions. Neke from Nigeria says he is a failure. He is tongue-in-cheek. He is involved in the petroleum ministry fraud running into billions of dollars.
And Chenyeri Esefa also says he is on track towards failure. Imagine 2.5 years his administration has not claimed, has not recovered anything. Some interesting comments there. Join the conversation. Continue to keep them coming.
On the spot.
On the spot, from Europe to America, Asia to Africa, gang violence has existed for as long as humanity has. How to deal with it is a daunting task for law enforcement agencies. In Africa, South Africa is among those with high cases of gang violence. On the spot today, we take you to Cape Town and tell you the story of gangsters turned gang mediators and Safety Lab, an organization revamping gang violence using mediation. Tony Andrews brings us that report.
My name is Nathaniel Roloff. I'm the director and CEO of the Safety Lab.
Safety Lab is an NGO based in Cape Town, South Africa, that deploys mediators to negotiate peace agreements when gang fights break out. The initiative comes as a response to the incredibly high murder rate in the city, one of the worst in the world. Over 2,400 murders were recorded in the city in 2015 alone.
Violence is probably the biggest issue facing everyone here.
The efforts of Nathaniel and other gang mediators have been remarkably effective at preventing violence, sometimes ushering in ceasefires that last for months. He says the key to the success is understanding that gangs also have a desire for peace.
Gang leaders as well as gang members are just as human as any of us, and rarely are they willing to see long-term prolonged conflict in communities. They just often say things like they just never really had a way of communicating other than through violent force.
Nathaniel says that mediators have leverage in those scenarios because, as counterintuitive as it sounds, the gangs have an interest in being seen as positive forces in the community.
All the gangs function with a dual edge. One is, you know, as violent actors, people who kill other people. But there's another edge, which is they want the community to see them as a protecting force. They want the community to see them as a force for development.
The mediation methods are simple. In the face of possible or actual violence, one of the Safety Lab team members will speak to gang leaders and try to reason with them.
One night when we had an engagement with an Irish individual, and we went into this house.
That's Colin Barons. He's been involved in gang interruptions for several years now. He's telling me about some of his daily activities.
We had a talk with him for an hour or two because he was on his way to go and retaliate, to do some shooting. But when we went into the conversation with him and talk about the issue, the community, the fear, the kids, you know, the consequences of.
Colin tells me this particular gang member eventually was dissuaded. But though the intervention worked in that case, things can get very dangerous when tensions are running high. Part of why Colin can be so effective is because he himself was a member of a gang when he was younger. He says it started at school when he would do drugs with friends, which led to crime. But he has since left a life of crime, in part for the sake of his family.
I got kids now, but I don't want my kids to feel the rejection that I feel.
Nowadays, he puts the credibility and trust he has with gangs to persuade them to make non-violent choices.
Although it's for a month or 2-3 months, at least you have saved a life. One life, there's no amount of money I think you can put on one life. You know, that's why we believe in mediation.
Very interesting report there. We all live in mediation, the best way to solve conflict. Tony Andrews sent us this report.
Living Planet Africa.
Garbage and waste continues to be a growing problem in Africa, mainly because there's no proper waste disposal and recycling in many countries. And that is exactly the case in Ghana, where plastic litters the road and washes up on the beaches. Two musicians are trying to change all that by doing what they know best, music. Abubakar Jallo has more on that report by Sasha Ganking and Daniela Spade.
That is Ghanaian rapper F.O. Chameleon. When he is not on stage performing, he is busy on his farm where he grows plantains, pineapples and cassava. F.O. grew up about 100 kilometers northwest of the capital Accra and has witnessed firsthand the damage pollution is causing to his environment. He says that is what drove him to using music to raise awareness about its effects.
It's what I have now. Way back we used to have a big, big cassava, but because of the soil has been polluted. No, we have lost a lot of nutrients in there.
Listen, folks, listen. I'm about to rap. I can rap, but I still have a cassava farm.
Yeah, what I'm trying to say is I'm a musician, but I also have to do something. I have to feed myself. So I'm doing something small to feed myself and my family. The plastic, the rubbish are everywhere. It's polluting the land. It's destroying our fertile land. Let's do something about it.
Keep Ghana clean. Sweep your gutter.
Ghana's capital, Accra, is clogged with plastic, mainly because authorities cannot keep up with the volumes of waste that Ghanaians toss out along the roads and gutters. During the rainy season, the rubbish all gets carried out to the sea in the Gulf of Guinea. Bola Beach is one of the most polluted beaches in Accra. Fishermen have been the most affected, like Patrick Loko, who just threw his net only to catch all kinds of plastics instead of fish.
Sometimes the trash pushes the net into the rocks, and that's the end of the net. You can't go out there to free it, because it will rip apart. So you need to find money to make a new net. It's really tough.
Onelove Dikubolo is another musician concerned about the country's environment. In his song, Refuse, Reuse, Recycle, Onelove has been talking about the benefits of recycling.
Sound the alarm, it's getting drastic.
We're causing harm with plastic.
Polluting oceans with oil.
Poisoning mountains of soil.
Refuse, reuse, recycle. Try and ride your bicycle.
These water bodies that we are not taking care of, we are killing the life in there. And what is happening, because there's no fish, no frogs, no other creatures in the water, the only thing thriving in this water now are mosquito babies, mosquito larvae. And so the environment is becoming more dangerous for us to live in.
The two anti-trash rappers are trying their best to fight Ghana's pollution problem with their best weapon, music with a message.
Of good. Keep Ghana clean.
Report by Sasha Ganking and Daniela Spade.
Interesting. Apart from that, let's talk about some peace issues. Now, the Global Peace Index is out and the Gambia has climbed the ladder to become a peaceful country. Sierra Leone, Liberia, Burundi and Senegal also made progress, joining Ghana, Namibia, Botswana, Zambia and Tanzania as the most peaceful countries in the continent. Meanwhile, Nigeria is in the category with DRC Congo, Libya, Somalia and South Sudan as the most non-peaceful countries. We asked you, does Nigeria deserve this ranking? And you've been commenting and we are presenting what you think about it.
Yeah, interesting comments for sure, Jane. Because everyone is trying to defend their country. Michael Adu says, wow, Ghana is more peaceful than the USA, China and Brazil.
Interesting. And Suku Bishop said, you should have a darker color for Nigeria. Our president is systematically killing off Christians around the country. Not our comments, but those of you listeners.
Saiku Sane from The Gambia says, the Gambia is always peaceful. We were once afraid of one person, but always peaceful.
That's a good one there. And Ahmed Rafai, who says, from a GPI, an institution called GPI, which is a non-political body, he says, well, write whatever data tells them. No peace in Nigeria. There's a lot of kidnapping and robbery and destruction. Probably he's basically trying to confirm what the peace index is saying.
And Teafe Zaka is asking, what happened to Cameroon? What's the secret for the peace others enjoy? Liberia, the Gambia, Sierra Leone and company in the late 90s.
Jane Powell says, well done, especially for Sierra Leone. And Nana Danso says, I'm smiling from the coast of Africa, that is the Gambia. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Jane Ayeko-Kumet.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. Bye for now.